Good morning. Good morning. Good afternoon. Tweet. Tweet done. It is morning for me. What are we at? 8:40 tomorrow for most of you watching this. So I have gone and done the kid run to school, gone to my favorite local coffee shop, which is now starting to open up more, which is actually really nice. So I'll come and talk about what it's like here day to day in a moment, because I've got to do the sponsor thing first because I'm inverting everything these days. So the sponsor thing first is Duo Security this week. So Duo Security has been a sponsor on my blog before, multiple times before. They're talking about phishing being one of the most common threats hitting organizations, which is pretty fair because organizations are full of people and we know how poor people are at doing security things. All the good technical controls in the world, and then suddenly phishing comes along and people get socially engineered, and here we are. So what else happened here? Find out how it works and what you can do about it. So good content from Duo there. Duo is a really good fit for the things that I do as well. So if you haven't checked out Duo, go and have a look at them. I've reorganized myself today. I am looking at the live chat as well. So good morning to everyone chiming in there. Thanks for joining. I thought earlier on, actually, when I tweeted about this, I went, come keep me amused. And I thought I didn't actually have a lot to talk about. And then whilst I was driving this morning, I was like, there is actually quite a bit of stuff happening. Relevant stuff. So a few little things here. I have sort of been kicking off each one of these just by talking a little bit for a few minutes about what it's like here in terms of COVID-19 and getting back to daily normal life and everything. I've literally just pulled out.
Is there something else I can help with?
It's so weird. She's always listening. This is the thing. It's like for those listening just to the audio later on, this is Siri just deciding to pop in at the most weird times. Anyway. G'day, Mike. Thank you for joining. Hope that was fun the other day as well. Mike and I did a thing. Anyway, there's a link to it. Mike can put a link in there. All right, so what's it like here? Stats as of 1 hour ago. What are we? Oh, well, how do they work this out? So there's a couple of things I've noticed, and I guess that this is in some ways not an exact science, but stats can like really, really fluctuate. So you can be looking at things and then suddenly there's a big jump or a big fall. So for some reason, I don't know why it's done this, but I'm happy about it. 2 hours ago, we had 422 active cases of COVID-19 in Australia. Now we have 310. Now, I don't know why we just lost like a quarter of our active cases. These tweet threads often have some good info here. They're saying New South Wales, which is our next state down, updated active case figures, they haven't been added. I don't know. All I know is it's going in the right direction, which is good. So we are still heading very, very much in the right direction, which is nice. Queensland, my home state, I did actually take a look at this a little bit earlier on. Burton, what am I drinking? It's like it's literally coffee, mate. This is not wine inside a coffee cup because it's early. So my home state now, we're down at 4 active cases, 5 million people in the state, 4 active cases. There is one person in hospital in ICU, unfortunately, but that is just amazing. Our city here with about 600,000 people, I think we have one of those 4 cases in the state here. So stuff is sort of gradually returning to normal. I've been to more restaurants. So far, just for lunch or breakfast. I haven't gone out to dinner yet. One of my favorite steak restaurants I noticed had opened back up tonight, I think. And I was looking at the bookings, and it's like, yeah, good luck getting in there, because although they're opening back up, they're limited to 20 people per sort of logical area of the restaurant. So the problem for them now, and this is another problem, another very first world problem we'll get to in a moment, is that because all of these facilities can now only have a very, very low density of people there, they're obviously not making a lot of money on it and they've still got to pay staff, so they really, really need people to come. And then when those people come, they're charging a lot of money. So the related first world problem is in January, when we're all totally naive about this stuff, I booked a snow trip in Australia for August. So I'm meant to be going to the snow in August. I have paid for the accommodation, which snow anywhere in the world ain't cheap. And in Australia in particular, there's this really, really small window of opportunity for any business at the snow to make their money. So what I didn't realize is after I'd paid for everything, yesterday they're like, okay, so we're opening up lift ticket sales now, the mountain, and there's a queue and you've got to get in the queue, like a virtual queue. And they're going to open up at 12 o'clock. So like 12:02, I'm in there and I'm like number 12,000 in the queue. And then they seem to only allocate a very small number of tickets because of social distancing, like a four-person chairlift, they can only put two people on. So imagine halving your capacity. And as best I can tell, the dates that I need are going to be all sold out of tickets, but I've paid for the accommodation. So again, this is like I realize how ridiculously first world this problem is because we're happy and healthy and living well. But it's just these sort of odd things that are now happening as we try and get back into a normal cycle. But then again, that's 2 months from now. I'm meant to be down there. So who knows what else will change between now and then. I noticed some sporting events, even some of the rugby, is opening back up to like limited capacities. So we're getting there bit by bit by bit, certainly in Australia anyway. And there's a lot of talk as well about being able to go to New Zealand soon enough, certainly from states like this, which have very, very low cases. New Zealand's down to zero. Like they have no cases at all. So New Zealand and Australians do tend to flow pretty freely each way under normal circumstances. So hopefully, look, if I can't go to the snow here, maybe I'll get to go to the snow in New Zealand or something instead. Hmm. Now, just looking at some comments here. Anthony, hi, Troy. New South Wales health have changed definition. So that 100 drop something that we just suddenly got, Anthony, is that just one state changing the way they how do you define an active case? I guess it's one thing to go, were you positive or not? But maybe, I don't know, maybe now it's like you're less active sooner. Who knows? All right, exactly. Look, the numbers look good. Let's just go with that. Cases that are not recorded as recovered or deceased after 6 weeks are not included. Okay, right, I've got to read more of the comments. So I got you now. Incidentally, my recording setup's a little bit funky today because two nights ago when I was doing a workshop, which we'll talk about in the morning, talk about in a moment, this worked really, really well. Last night when I tried to chime into the NDC, one of the Slack channels there or one of the WebEx channels just for a bit of a discussion, didn't work anymore. So I've got the little lapel mic on at the moment, and then I've got to figure out, do I just replace this with another Electro Voice? What is it, an RE320 or something like that? Because this has done the miles. Don't get me wrong. This has done, geez, probably thousands of hours of recording. So I can't complain too much. But that happened. I got a fan down there in the PC, which is making that terrible whirring sound, which I've probably got to replace. But again, first world problems. All right, just looking at some of the other comments to make sure that I don't go off on a tangent again. Thank you, Frederick. I think Frederick's in Norway, and yeah, based on my watch, it's 12:45 in the morning in Norway. Okay. Oh, geez, it's Scott. Scott's here too. Anyway, g'day, mate. So moving on, a couple other things. So I'll do this a little bit out of order from my notes here. So I mentioned doing a workshop. So Scott and I did an NDC Hack Yourself First workshop together on earlier this week. So again, this is sort of the virtual scenario, which we've been doing many times. So Scott and I did one for the Australia Friendly Time Zone a couple of months ago. We did Copenhagen, we did Porto, we've done Oslo. So we've sort of been going around the virtual world, still doing these workshops. I had a bunch of people actually in the Oslo one, which was good because normally I would be in Oslo at the moment doing the entire thing. This is the first time since 2014. I haven't been in Oslo this time of year. We will be doing another one. I think you know this, Scott, but we'll be doing another one for NDC Melbourne, which is going to be next month. So I'm going to start to talk more about that soon, and we'll try and give that a bit of a plug. That will be on a time zone which is more friendly for Australia, New Zealand, Southeast Asia, all this sort of thing. So we'll go that with that as well. Okay. So just looking at the comments. Someone who was not actually me signed Scott up during the workshop for a website which they thought Scott would find entertaining. Let's just leave it at that. And it wasn't me, mate. It honestly wasn't me. Someone else signed you up. I may have signed you up to different things, but it wasn't that thing. So moving on, I did what I think is my most popular tweet ever this week. And I just noticed as well, when I feel like my AV stuff is just not my friend today. That camera, the Logitech Brio, as nice a camera as it is, it does tend to just go in and out of focus a bit. And if I just turn off autofocus, it fixes it. Now, of course, so long as I stay the same distance from the screen, everything's okay, but regardless. All right, so moving on. My most popular tweet, and this was kind of unexpected. So I walked out of my front door last week, and there was a telephone book on my doorstep, like the actual physical, big, thick combination white pages and yellow pages telephone book, which I certainly have not used in many, many years. And I was very surprised to see that. And then I'm walking down to the shops and every single house has got this great big freaking telephone book on the doorstep. So I just put out a bit of a tongue-in-cheek tweet. And I said, someone just delivered me a massive data breach. It's all their names, addresses, phone numbers, huge. I found it a bit ironic because if someone had sent me that in a digital format, it would have been a really serious incident. People would have been like, this is outrageous. This has got my name and my phone and my address in there, which is literally what they have. So I thought that was, okay, a little bit funny. And when I look now at the tweet analytics, it's had 929,000 impressions, which is amazing, 195,000 engagements. So I'm pretty sure that's a new high for me. Something like, where were we, 10,000 plus likes. Incidentally, just in case you're wondering, how many new followers do you get out of a tweet like this? 929,000 impressions, I gained one new follower out of that tweet. And this is like my best work, empirically speaking, anyway, that tweet. So that was kind of funny. And there are a few interesting comments that, like, a bunch of people are like, how backwards is Australia that you still have these phone books? Look, I kind of agree. I don't know why we still have these. They're ridiculous. A lot of people have said, we haven't had this in, I think one person said, in Norway for 8 years. So, yep, that would make sense not to have that. A little bit of backwards and forwards about forcing you to opt out and paying money to opt out. I think that might be region specific because certainly in Australia you can opt out, which I did many, many years ago. And I did actually check and I wasn't in this one. I'm quite sure it doesn't actually come with a cost or anything here as well. So that was kind of odd. All right. So other thing on my list, IoT. Holy shit, have I gone down the rabbit hole of IoT. So I am writing all this up into a blog, but just to give you a little bit of a sense of what's in here. In fact, I think it's going to have to be two blogs because my original plan was I was going to IoT my garage door. So I've got two garage doors because there's like an internal garage, which is like part of the house where, you know, I've got bikes and things like that as well. And that's a sort of pretty secure area. And then there's like a carport where the sides are open and then there's just a thing at the front. So someone could climb over the fence and sort of see that bit, but for all intents and purposes, the car's pretty secure there. So we've got two garage doors. The remotes for them are like these crusty old, you know, basic little clicky things, which you, I'm going to use the wrong words here, cryptographically configured so that you can't just replicate them. You have to go and buy new ones and reconfigure them from the manufacturer. And this is a different rabbit hole I went down a while ago. So what I really wanted to do is IoT the door so I can just lift my hand up, speak to the lady on the watch. I won't say her name or she'll chime in again. And particularly when I'm in the car, because the one of the cars at least has a CarPlay integrated into it, so I can talk to the car and just say, you know, open this door or close that door, whatever. It'll be fine. This will be easy. Someone must have done this before. No and yes. So it turns out it's not trivial, but lots of people have done this in different ways. And I started sort of going down this rabbit hole, which began from the premise of, and I'll just open up my draft blog post here, began from the premise of, okay, so what we need to do here is effectively just create a circuit around two points on a terminal block on the back of the door unit. So there's a great big door unit that hangs on the roof. It's got the chain and everything on it. Terminal block, all you have to do is you have to close the circuit between the OSC and the COM port, job done. So all I need is a little device to do that. And then as you start going down this rabbit hole, basically the only way that really makes sense to do that is via a product called Sonoff SV. There are a couple of other similar things, but for all intents and purposes, it's still a little PCB that you then need to wire into the terminal block. The terminal block does provide 24 volts as well, so you can actually power it from there. Sweet, no problems. Now, it took me a long time to figure out that this was the right thing to do, but then what does it talk to? Because ultimately I want to use Home Assistant, which is what Siri talks to. Don't say her name. She'll chime in again. So somehow I ended up going from starting with that to, okay, well, now that can talk to Home Assistant. So a heap of people said, go and get Home Assistant. It's really cool. I'd half agree with that. I went and got Home Assistant. Some bits are cool, but it is also really, really feels like a backyard project. And I went and got that. That's running on a Raspberry Pi at the moment. So I'm starting to connect a bunch of things to that. But then it was like, okay, now what I want to do is get things like some of these Xiaomi thermometers. So I was like, okay, it'd be cool to be able to tell the temperature in a different room. Now these all run over Zigbee. So now I'm going down the Zigbee rabbit hole, because if I want to have devices that talk over Zigbee, because a lot of, like, this won't just talk to Wi-Fi, for those of you who have not done this before, this is Bluetooth Low Energy, it'll talk Zigbee, you've got to have a Zigbee hub. Apparently all the hubs that, you know, the likes of Xiaomi sell are actually kind of crap, and what you really should do is go out and get a Conbi 2, which, and I'm just looking at my whole list of things that's in my draft blog post here, which is a universal Zigbee gateway. This has a CC2531 chipset, which is made by Texas Instruments, which allows it to act as a Zigbee sniffer. And then suddenly I'm just in this spiral going, so all I wanted to do was open my garage door with my voice. And now I've learned all these new things I didn't know of before. And I've actually put a glossary on the end of this draft blog post. So I've got Aquera in the glossary, which is, I still haven't figured out exactly what that is. It's part of a Xiaomi product suite. The CC chipset, Conbi, Decons, which I need to then configure on the Raspberry Pi, which the Conbi will go into and act as a Zigbee sniffer. Home Assistant, which I spoke about, HomeKit. The IEEE 802.15.4, which is effectively the protocol which is used in Zigbee. I can't pronounce any of the Chinese words, unsurprisingly. Magia, we'll call it that, which looks to be part of the Xiaomi product suite. MQTT, which is, I haven't put the definitions of the glossary in there yet. Some of the protocol around using Zigbee on the Conbi, Tasmodo to reflash some of the devices, Z-Wave, a competing spec or competing standard, as best I understand, to Zigbee, and then, of course, Zigbee itself. And I'm just going down and down and down and down this rabbit hole. And the problem as well is that I need all of these different little bits. And because of the current environment with COVID-19 and everything, and because a lot of it comes from China, it's like you go onto eBay and order it and they're like, okay, that'll be 4 weeks. So it's like, all right, well, that part of the whole project now gets to sit here for 4 weeks. So that goes nowhere. So that's a little bit annoying. But I think I'm sort of getting there. And a lot of this is actually pretty cool. I think I now know all the bits that need to tie together. I've ended up buying a total of 4 different Xiaomi thermometer/hygrometers in order to just try and see which ones I like, because they're only about, like, I think they're $13 to $20 each. So it's like, all right, not a great loss. So a lot of comments going in here. What am I missing? Scott has, like, literally hijacked my thing. It's nothing important there. No, nothing important there at all. Yeah, back on topic. So I think I'm sort of getting there. I'm actually going to have a phone call with a mate of mine on Wednesday night, because he saw me talking about Home Assistant, and he's like, oh, I love Home Assistant. We've got to talk about this. I'll walk you through the whole thing. So I'm going to have a chat with him and try and figure out how to actually get the most out of this. But I understand that you have a whole bunch of devices, and then you've got things that can trigger them, and you can create sort of routines, or it sounds like IoT macros, for want of a better term. If anyone has used Home Assistant before and you've got stuff that you find is absolutely essential in there, yeah, perhaps with specific devices, maybe you've got like a motion sensor or there's a door closed or thing sensor, I'd really like to know, because at the moment I kind of have like a fuzzy idea of actually how to make this work well. So that is the IoT stuff. We'll see where that ends up leading. Now, the one blog post that I did write this week was around my regional director renewal, which is nice. So there's another 2 years of people getting confused about me not working for Microsoft. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about that. I kind of wondered, like, if I write something on this, and I've written about every time I've had an RD renewal or an MVP renewal, what am I going to write? Because it's a little bit of a funny time. And I was kind of thinking, like, what picture should I put? Because you've got to pick like a picture for the hero image on the blog post. And I picked one with me speaking in Budapest. So I spoke at an event there in September. And I sort of said, you know, look, this was 259 days ago, 15,500 kilometers away, and there was 1.3 billion records less than have I been pwned. And I was just kind of, I guess, reflecting on how much stuff has changed, particularly the stuff that contributes to my RD award. And sort of to be clear about that, it's, you know, the RD award and the MVP award, both of these are around doing community-centric things. So, yeah, obviously writing loads of blog posts, doing conference talks, user groups, podcasts, all this sort of stuff. And I was kind of thinking my life had gotten so defined by me traveling to do speaking events and to do workshops. You know, how is that now different? And, you know, I was just mentioning before, Scott and I were doing the remote workshops. So, yeah, like, hey, we're still doing workshops. We just do them remotely. I certainly do less because a lot of the ones I did were in person. Companies want you to come in person, but still doing a bunch of them. Conference talks. So obviously no one's traveling for conference talks now, and I've just cut way back on them. I do conference talks that I really want to do that are online, but, and I mentioned this the other day, and I had a bunch of people go, yeah, like this is spot on. I got to be honest, like doing talks online is a lot less fulfilling as a speaker. It is so much less fulfilling because you get no engagement from the audience. Like nothing comes back. You don't see anyone smiling. You don't hear laughter. You don't have people coming up to you afterwards wanting to shake your hand or take a selfie or just have a bit of a chat. Like none of that happens. So if you take all that away and you're left with literally just speaking out the words of the presentation, it's like what's left? Why are you doing it? One of the reasons is financial. Like I do get paid for a lot of the talks I do. I still need to make a living. So there's that, but is it fulfilling? Not really. It really, really is not the same way. Now that said, engagements like this one seems to be descending into now where there's actually people making comments and coming backwards and forwards. And particularly, you know, like Scott and I did a public cyber broken one a little while ago. That was fulfilling. That was really good fun because we actually got interaction with people. But as a speaker, just doing talks online, it's just not the same in any way, shape, or form. All right, I have a look at some of these comments, Burton. I think Microsoft should change the name of Microsoft Regional Director to something that doesn't mean working for Microsoft. This is like this discussion has come up so many times within Microsoft channels as well. And you know, little secret, not an NDA secret, but a secret on this. A lot of people in Microsoft don't know what it is either. So they don't know what the title is. And I've even spoken to quite senior people at sometimes and within Microsoft. And they're like, so you work for Microsoft? No, I don't. Well, what region do you have? I don't have one. What do you direct? I don't direct anything. How much do they pay? Well, they don't ask for how much they pay me, but they don't pay me anything. So it is a confusing title. The bit that I'm hesitating on is that because it does sound kind of important, it does also open doors and get you access to things that you might not have done otherwise. I don't really have a better title that achieves that objective and doesn't create the confusion. And I'm just not sure the confusion actually matters that much. And most of the time when I hear the confusion, it's people being angry with me. You know, it'll be like they want to find a reason to get angry at me, so they'll refer to Windows ME. It'll be like, Troy, you suck. And that Windows ME was terrible as well. Somehow that was my fault. But anyway, they still let you claim that you work for Microsoft. So, Frederick, I don't claim that I work for Microsoft. In fact, on my bio, if you go to the About link on my blog post, I think the second sentence says, I don't work for Microsoft. And this is one of the things I get a little bit pissed at when people are angry at me and they say it's unclear. It's like I'm as clear as I can be about that. Imagine they get salty since you managed to keep your Azure bill so low because of Cloudflare caching. So little known fact, but a public fact, Microsoft is an investor in Cloudflare. So Microsoft put money into Cloudflare very early on. So by no means are they adversarial. They've got a whole bunch of stuff that crosses over. But Microsoft is friends with Cloudflare. Don't worry about that. Frederick, sorry, reading back up, MQTT equals message queuing telemetry transport. So these are the things that I'm learning. This is why I have to put a glossary. First time I've ever put a glossary on a blog post. And I've had to try and make it a little bit clearer. Recently on NordVPN, they're prompting me to change my pass every time I open the app. It's a random, long, unique password. Well, that sounds weird. Yeah, they shouldn't do that. I'm not sure why that happens. Incidentally, on changing passwords, I have a blog post in draft that actually has Scott in it, and I know that you know this, mate, which was around, you know, every now and then someone has an account takeover, and then they pop up and they're angry on Twitter. I know, right? Like, what are the chances? They're angry on Twitter and they're like, this was a strong, unique password generated by Password Manager. You know, there's no way that this was a credential stuffing attack where they took it from another data breach. They must have been hacked. And I've seen a lot of this happen with Nintendo recently and all sorts of other organizations that have been at the tail end of the receiving end of credential stuffing attacks. And very often you end up finding that either strong password is a liberal definition or there was something else involved there. So the reason I got an example from Scott, and he was public about it at the time, I think it might have been your Pinterest account, mate, but it was something along the lines of he actually had two accounts and there was a confusion and one really was a bad password from a long time ago. The Nintendo thing seems to be that there were like two accounts with Nintendo and one of them could be linked to another. I'll get this right before I actually blog it. If the other one, someone got into that, then they could take over your main one and the main one might have had a strong password, but there's some sort of auth token or something that comes from the other one. So that's a blog post which is coming. Yeah, I know, having two accounts in the same place. Mike, has Babylon Health come onto your radar yet? So what's happening with Babylon Health? And also there's a little bit of a lag here, so I think that's probably about a 10-second lag. So I'll ask something or say something, then it'll be a bit before you see it. But while Mike's thinking about that, there's another comment here. Microsoft have a history of naming confusion. Yeah, that's fair. They've got some sucky names. Something else changed name recently, and I can't remember what it is. And I went in to try and find it, and that's what it was, Microsoft Flow. It's not Microsoft Flow anymore, but you can still go to flow.microsoft.com. So Microsoft Flow is like the Microsoft version of if this, then that. So now it is Power Automate, not just Automate, Power Automate. There you go. So Mike says, an app that allowed users to view other people's healthcare visits. Oh, I tweeted at this, didn't I? Because someone, I think, is this the one where someone said there was a list of like video files or something and he said, I can go and see the consultation of other people's healthcare professional visits. Like if that's the case, that is, I sort of have a question as to why you would be recording that in the first place, given the risk it poses. But yeah, that's super, super, super sucky. So that's definitely not good. So that is everything that I had on my list. If people have questions, chuck them in because there is a little bit more conversation going today than what there normally is. Whilst you're thinking about that, I'm going to go back to that home assistant thing. I really, really want to figure out how to make this work well. So what's kind of cool, and later on I'll do screen caps and everything of this for those who haven't seen it before, but you kind of go through, you can do a combination of like discovering the devices in your house and then manually adding them in. And it's come up with everything from once I installed the app on my iPhone and iPad Pro, and incidentally, that was a pain in the ass trying to actually get it to work on here, because the first time I ran it, every time I sort of click continue, it'd just crash. And I tweeted about it and people are like, oh yeah, you got to turn off Wi-Fi before you click that button, otherwise it crashes. Didn't I say it felt a bit rough before? And then Scott was trying to find it only a couple of days ago. And I know, mate, you said, I can't find it anywhere. Is it like not in the UK app store, but it's in other places? It's like, well, actually they pulled it from the app store because they had too many glitches and maybe it's back again now. I don't know. But anyway, once you install it, it can share a whole bunch of information with Home Assistant around things like, is your device charging? Which SSID are you connected to? The MAC address of your SSID. I'll rephrase that, it's not bad. The MAC address of the access point you're connected to, because in my house I've got a bunch of them via Ubiquiti. Have you checked out Cloudflare TV? There's been some pretty interesting things on there. What's Cloudflare TV? Did not even know that. Sean Wright, what's your view of the recent article about spyware? Not sure if you've covered this yet. There have been so many articles about spyware, so I'm not sure which one you're referring to, but I'll give you my view on spyware. It's really sucky. Now, first of all, there are, I think, two or three different data breaches in Have I Been Pwned of spyware. So keep in mind, spyware is something that normally runs with elevated privileges on a device, such as installing profiles so that it can do things like access all sorts of things that it shouldn't normally be able to do. It's often sold as parental controls. So you're a parent, you want to be able to make sure your kids aren't getting up to no good, so install this. And then you can see things like their photos and their messages, which is just all kinds of problematic, because how do you think the parents do that? Like, you got to get the photos and the messages from the kid's device and put them somewhere central so that the parent can then look at them. In reality, very often it's used in cases of domestic violence or stalking, which is just atrocious stuff, because now you've got an abusive partner literally tracking their spouse. And this isn't like Friend Finder, right? This is the messages, the phone calls they make, the photos they take. So it's just recalcitrant stuff. Now, a little while ago, both Apple and Google started cracking down on this in the App Store as well. And I know there's a big push from the likes of the EFF to try and actually get this stuff just out of circulation. So hopefully that has nailed what you were referring to there, Sean. And I'm just looking back through the comments. The recent one where they gave a step-by-step to install spyware on your partner's device. Oh, shit, really? Why would you do that? Can you drop a link into the comments on that, Sean? I'm actually curious to see that. Wow, that is really, really sucky. So, no, I'm just adamant that that's all kinds of bad from top to bottom. The thing is, as well, is that you have parental controls built into these devices. You can decide what time your kids are allowed to start using the device, which apps can they use, how much time can they spend on the apps, which ones are whitelisted so you can use them at any time. You get insight into the things that they are using, and you can get that from here, and you can also get it from a Windows machine as well. And I believe, and I haven't had to set this up because my kids are too young yet, but you can put controls around which of their contacts they can communicate with too. Now, that's not perfect by any means, don't get me wrong, but that's the starting point. And the question then is that sufficient? And the excuse that I often hear, it's the same excuse about kids' tracking watches, you know, those little GPS watches, where someone will say, oh, yes, but my child is either out of control or sometimes at high risk. So maybe they have a mental disability and we're really worried about them just wandering off and getting lost, and this is why we put it on them. And so, okay, well, I can see cases where it is less clear cut, but, man, it'd want to be exceptional to do that stuff. Andre, how do you deal with smart lights that need to pair to a phone app, having issues with desync? So I think there's a whole discussion about patterns of IoT, and I really think about how much IoT stuff we're starting to get. Like, I'm going to go and look at my Ubiquiti network at the moment, and I think I've got more than 40 IP addresses in the house. And there are probably some of you just hearing that going, is that all? But it's getting up there, and this is just the IP addresses of devices that are on the Wi-Fi. That's not going to include things like this, which are just going to communicate directly to a Zigbee sniffer somewhere. And I guess the bit that I worry about is I don't want to end up having to have bespoke custom third-party apps for every single thing I control. And this is sort of, as I understand it, the value proposition of Home Assistant. It's like, let's have one central hub which can control this. So you can still use the custom app if you want to. But say my son has got Nano Leaf in his room. If you haven't seen Nano Leaf before, look them up. They're awesome. They're like triangular, where you can get square ones. LED panels that you put in a pattern, then you can make them flash and change colors and things. There's an app for that. He's also got some Arlec LED light strips. And their IoT, they connect with a system called Grid Connect. Incidentally, neither of those things actually integrate with HomeKit, but they do integrate with Alexa or the Amazon ecosystem, so you can ask Alexa to turn them on or off. But then there's two separate apps, and then I'd have some Philips Hue as well. In fact, you can see just in the background, there's a Philips Hue Go sitting just there. That's a different app again that does work with HomeKit. So you start getting this really fragmented ecosystem. So I do really like the idea of not needing bespoke apps for any of the things in here. And I don't mind if they're on my phone. I just don't want to have to keep going back to them every day. So I'd much rather have them all connected and then have some form of central orchestration. But the big issue that I have is that the coalface of my, I guess, IoT world, I'd really like to be HomeKit from Apple, because that's the ecosystem I'm in. I'm not in the Google ecosystem in terms of devices. I really don't want to be dependent on Amazon Echoes, and I want to be able to talk to things like my watch and ask it to do things. But there's so many products that aren't compatible with HomeKit. But then you can use Home Assistant and you can integrate Home Assistant with HomeKit. But like, how many bits are we tying together now? Imagine my parents wanted to do this And yeah, they're early 70s. I'm just picking them because they're in a demographic which is not going to be keen to sort of sit there and actually work this whole thing out. I mean, it just gets super, super messy. All right, what else? I feel like it's hard when these comments on YouTube aren't actually threaded. So how many devices did I have on this network now? It's got me wondering. In fact, my Ubiquiti network is going great because I haven't had to think about it. Like, you know it's working well when you just don't think about it. So I've got, actually, I've only got 32 clients on here at the moment, but that's because the kids are at school and that takes away a watch and it takes away a laptop. Some other stuff probably just isn't turned on. Oh, Scott, yeah, the IoT candle. So I, and I think Scott as well, had backed the Kickstarter for the IoT candle, not because we want an IoT candle, but we just wanted to see how messed up stuff gets. And they had to pull the pin, which is a real shame. And I'm walking around lighting my candles like an idiot with a damn lighter. But that would have been interesting to see. What I do really love about stuff like this little thermometer that I've got in my hand is so small. I mean, it's probably about 5 centimeters across. And it actually comes with a little double-sided sticky on the back so that you can put them on walls somewhere. As soon as I got this, someone said, oh, wow, you can still get the first generation. I was like, oh, shit, I've got the old one already. So there's a newer one, which I've also ordered, and I'm waiting for that to arrive. Same sort of deal. And I like the idea of just being able to kind of stick these around the house. What I'd really like to be able to do is automation around the HVAC stuff, so around things like my climate control. So because Australia, we've got air conditioning, which can also go reverse cycle, but you can't use a Nest, you can't use any of the sort of normal devices for climate control that you would use in other parts of the world like the US, because apparently Australian systems are really complex and they do other things beyond just like plugging your Nest into it. So I got to look at that a little bit further as well. But I'd really like to be able to do that. Simon, I got my mum one password. She loves it, except it turns out she's been using the Chrome built-in password management. Yeah, so what I've tended to do is if it's me or other people have gotten onto 1Password, I'll just go into the Chrome settings after 1Password's set up and then just delete all the passwords that have been saved in Chrome and disable that as well. And it's not because I'm particularly worried about Chrome. I just don't need passwords in multiple places. Cameron, Homebridge. Yes, Homebridge is what I was thinking about. I need to put that as another item on my glossary here because I've ended up with so much stuff. So originally this blog post was going to be how to automate my garage door. And then as I went further and further and further and further down the rabbit hole, I realized that what it now needs to be is it needs to be, this is basically how to make all this stuff work together. And then now that you've got all of that, here's how to do the bloody garage door. Homebridge. Okay, that's on the glossary. Do that as well. Scott says, the newer one only adds a barometer, not missing a lot. Yeah, but it's newer and it's square. I'm stuck with this stupid round one. Jeez. Yeah, so Homebridge, Scott, is effectively the bridge between Home Assistant and HomeKit. And I did start setting this up the other day, and what happens is you can go into HomeKit and you can start to see all the things that are in Home Assistant. I'll think about my words properly there. And then you can start to integrate those back into HomeKit. But I think I did this the other day and I ended up with a whole bunch of stuff I didn't really expect. And honestly, like particularly looking at Home Assistant, you realize how simplistic HomeKit, the Apple one, is. Like it's missing so much stuff. Yeah, it's a bridge for the bridge's bridge. Yeah, pretty much. This is why I'm just... So just for a little bit of chronology here, I asked this question about how to do my garage door on April 25. So this is approaching 2 months ago, and I'm still no closer to actually getting the bloody door to work, but I can turn the Nano Leaf on and off in my son's room. Oh, it's painful. Really, it's painful. And it's also why I want to get this blog post done properly And I've had like multiple windows with like 50 tabs each on all these different IoT things going on. Okay, I need to remember this and remember this. And then particularly remembering all the different home assistant modules. And it just gets so weird as well, because it's not like, yeah, here's a thermometer, put it in your home, connected, it's all done. It's like, okay, what bridge is it going to use? Is it going to, do you have to poll it, or is it going to push notifications? Is it going to talk over Zigbee or Z-Wave? Is it going to connect directly to the network? And then when all that's done, I'm still not sure how I'm actually going to read the output of this. And what I mean by that is that, like, can I surface it somewhere easily visible, or will it be in Home Assistant, or will I use it to trigger something else? I don't know. I'm basically just putting shit in my house until it makes sense. That's pretty much what I'm doing. Yeah, Scott, the next release of Chrome and Tab Groups. When is that next release? Who can figure out when the next release of Chrome is coming, so that instead of having 10 windows with 50 tabs each, I can have one window with 10 groups of 50 tabs each? I think that release must be really soon. Andre, do you codify and persist your home network configuration? I back it up. So Ubiquiti has an option to back up your network configuration, or all your configuration within the Unify ecosystem. So all that's backed up. But having said that, I mean, I did it all from scratch recently. I was going to try and migrate my Ubiquiti V1 network, which was the very sort of manually put together one, into the new V2, which had the Dream Machine Pro. But I decided it was just easier to go from scratch, and it really actually didn't take too long. The thing that probably took the longest is all the different devices I had connected, I had to go and rename and give new icons to, just so my graphs look pretty. Fozzie says, next Chrome stable release is July 14. Okay, we're about a month out. So there must have been one only a couple of weeks ago, because they're usually on about a six-week cycle. July 14. Thanks, Burton. So other stuff that's coming out of Home Assistant at the moment, some of it's kind of cool. So it's got a built-in bit about the sun. So it's the sun below the horizon or above the horizon. It's obviously just sunset, sunrise times. There's also a bit in here in the weather, home. But see here, it's just like sunny. And I laugh because it's meant to rain all weekend, so, you know, it's not always like that. It's interesting looking at the amount of stuff that's now exposed by installing these HomeKit on my devices. But apparently I have one for Troy's iPad SIM 1. And it's just like, okay, which network are you connected to? I'm on Telstra. And, of course, this is not really going to change. The charging status seems a little bit unreliable. The BSSID of my iPhone is interesting, but it's also, I don't feel that it's entirely accurate, because then I'm just looking at the time. So until 7:41 this morning, I was on one MAC address it's got here. And then from then until 7:50, I was on another one. And then it shows a different one when I was out taking the kids to school, and then I'm back on the same one. So I'm not quite sure what to do with that. I've got, and see, the other thing is you've got to get all your devices named properly too. So I've got something called Lounge Room, and it's just off, 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 and then there's some very small changes of state, unavailable, somewhere in between at like 3:44 in the morning. I'm not sure what that is. Maybe that's, is that a light? Do I have a connected light in my lounge room? Which is a little bit of a mess. Frederick, now I actually get up to 25 degrees C here in northern Norway this weekend. Finally, the last patches of snow will melt. So what are we here? We're 9:23 in the morning. It's 19 degrees. Heading for 23 degrees today, which is not too bad. And this is pretty typical for winter, which is okay. Okay, folks, look, here's another interesting one. Troy's iPhone 11 Pro activity, stationary, walking, stationary. But see, this is the kind of thing, right? Like if I can create triggers on that, I'm not quite sure what trigger I'd create when I start walking or what the value proposition of it would be, but that's kind of the logic of it. I wonder if I go back to, if I show 3 days worth of activity and I look at activity, if it shows the different exercise I was doing. Because if I do an exercise, I will actually use the watch. That was actually one thing that I had in my RD blog post yesterday, where I think it was sometime early April was the last time I didn't close all the rings on my watch. And my exercise has just gone through the roof since I haven't been traveling, which is actually really good. Burton, what is the Ubiquity server? I don't have a Ubiquity server. Is there a Ubiquity server? I've got a lot of Ubiquity access points. You can see a whole bunch of other ones sitting behind me there. But no, I don't have a Ubiquity server. My coffee machine, unavailable. See, why is it unavailable? It's just a Wemo switch. I feel like I need to just spend a day getting Home Assistant to just have all the right things and make them work the right way and then figure out how to join them up and to do other useful things. Anyway, look, I'm going to leave it there because I'm just about out of coffee, which means I need to go and find another one if I'm to keep this pace up today. Thank you for watching, and also thanks for all the chiming in on the comments today. It does make it a lot more interesting, and it allowed us to spend a lot more time on this. I hope this still works when people watch it back later or listen to it via audio. So thank you for that. I'll come and do this next week, and I'm trying to alternate the time. So I'll try and do it later in the day, which will be better for the folks in the UK and Europe, and less good for the folks in America. But this morning worked well for them. Cheers, folks. See you.